Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Thanks to everyone who supports Daily Tech News Show directly. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, October 18th, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline for two more days, I'm Sarah Lane.
And in Oakland, California for the first time in 2 weeks, it's me, Justin Robert Young.
And sitting in for Roger Chang, I'm producing, I'm Anthony Lemos.
Hey, welcome back, Amos. Good to have you. Roger attending to some family stuff today. We miss him, but it's good to have Amos here. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
The Wall Street Journal reports that Facebook has tentatively concluded that the login token attack that exposed information for 29 million users was conducted by spammers and not a nation-state attack, as was previously rumored to be. Facebook is conducting an internal investigation itself and also cooperating with the FBI.
Amazon has launched Whisper Mode for English speakers in the U.S. Whisper Mode can be turned on in settings or by telling the Echo to turn it on and will cause the device to respond to whispered commands in a lower tone.
So we will now take to referring to her in a whisper on the show. Google announced the launch of Compose Actions on Gmail for G Suite. The feature lets you add attachments or other content from applications like Dropbox, Box, Ignite, and Jira right within the Gmail interface. Users will need to add the services in the Gmail add-on tool. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the second shoe dropping from Apple.
Feel those shoes drop. Apple sent out invites to the to an event at the Brooklyn Academy of Music on October 30th with the phrase, "There's more in the making." Apple usually announces new iPads and various other hardware in October.
So I love the little dance that tech journalism does when these come out. Pretending as if they have an insight that is special somehow. Oh, Apple's announcing something else. I bet it's an iPad. They always announce iPads in October. That's just what they do. Where it gets more speculative is, okay, is it going to be an iPad Pro? That seems to be the good money. Will there be other things? And what will the other things be? The smart money is on a MacBook Air, Rev. Are we going to see that wireless charging thing finally show up? And do you think there'll be any surprises, any Apple TV related announcements? What's your best guess?
I keep waiting for all those original Apple content to shows that we keep talking about, but there's really no indication. If you are trying to read the tea leaves of there's more in the making, I don't know. The Gather Round announcement when we talked about the new iPhones didn't really turn into anything. I don't think that means as much as people would like to think it means.
It really does. Making stuff with your iPad would be sufficient to make that make sense.
There you go. Yeah.
I think that the Air Force or Air Power charger, Matt, as much as I would love it, might be down the memory hole at this point, considering all the rumor, the reporting behind it. For this, look, this is something that I think iPads are in a very interesting place. It's curious to see where they want to go or if it's just such a steady earner for them that it's refresh it, make it a little faster, and ship them out. This is just the new version that you buy when you're buying something for someone for Christmas.
Well, you know, I would love a a reimagined MacBook Pro. I have the touch display version. It's 2 years old. It's my road warrior, and there are things that are wrong with it at this point.
Sand, you know,
the keyboard display doesn't light up anymore, and the keys are all messed up. And you know, I run it hard, but I'm sort of tentatively in the market for a new MacBook. The MacBook Air, for a variety of reasons, just because I do a lot of video editing, is not quite robust enough for the next machine that I want. So
unless you get the Shadow service and you have a full powered Windows machine in the cloud.
Unless I did that. And that's something to think about. Although having local storage is really advantageous for a lot of reasons, but yeah, that would be my hope. And the thing is that the touch bar, I like it, but it didn't seem to surprise and delight anybody else. Nobody really likes it. Nobody really uses it that I know of. So I'd like to know what Apple's going to do with that.
But Touch Bar to me was something that always felt like a mushy middle, even when they announced it. I think force touch for them was something that never congealed in the way that it might have. Whereas now I would just be more excited about. It might be worth upgrading to another a MacBook Pro if it fully integrated in the way with that, like with my phone, including with the facial unlock and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if they fulfilled Sarah's wishes, unfortunately, because MacBook Pros aren't too long in the tooth. I wouldn't be shocked by a MacBook Air. That's due. Obviously, iPads are going to happen. I think we all know that. I'm wondering, though, if we get something else or even just a tease to something else. Yes, AirPower may never come, but that was an example of them teasing something ahead of time. I just have a gut feeling we're going to get a wild card announcement here. And it might be as simple as them pre-announcing the Apple TV service coming next year, or it could be some out of left field product that none of us saw coming and didn't actually get leaked somehow.
I don't know, the wireless charging, if Apple was really trying to just sort of let us all forget about that and it wasn't happening, they wouldn't have mentioned it at their event in September. That's my feeling.
I think they thought they were going to put it out and they ran into trouble that was unforeseen, and that's why it's being delayed.
Well, that might be true too.
Now, iPads are coming after the announcement of a lot of other tablet 2-in-1 hybrid announcements from Microsoft and Google and HP and Asus and others. And in fact, we got another one from Samsung today.
Yeah, interesting you mentioned that, Tom, because Samsung unveiled the Galaxy Book 2 with a Qualcomm Snapdragon 850 processor, gigabit LTE capability. Samsung also says it gets 20 hours on a single charge. Pretty good. The Book 2 speakers include Dolby Atmos support, and it has an all-new rear kickstand. This might start to sound kind of familiar because it's kind of like a service. It has a 12-inch 2160 by 1440 OLED display, runs Windows 10 S mode out of the box. There's also a fingerprint sensor on the upper right corner of the back. Comes with a keyboard and an S Pen with 128 gigabytes of storage and 4 gigabytes of RAM. The Galaxy Book 2 goes on sale November 2nd for $1,000.
Comes with a keyboard and S Pen. Is the feature that sticks out in my mind the most. 4 gigabytes of RAM, probably the one that sticks out negatively the most, but that is too often not the case, especially the pen, right? They often don't bundle in the keyboard, but it's usually maybe $150 or something like that. Whereas the pen feels like it should be cheaper, and it's always like $50 to $100.
Look, this is something that I think it's a natural outgrowth for Samsung. Samsung is a company that is famous for throwing a lot of spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. If they can get into that Surface market, then hot ham water, they're going to do it.
Yeah, because Surface Pro 6 is $900 before you buy a keyboard, right?
Right.
Which is going to cost you $150. And then if you want the pen, that's going to cost you another bit. So... yeah, I think this is a pretty compelling offering from Samsung, and it's showing, like, we used to freak out at the idea of Windows running on Qualcomm, you know, and I've got the old Surface back here behind me that had Windows RT and that whole fiasco. These days, it's just de rigueur. Nobody blinks an eye at it, and that Windows 10 S mode can be upgraded to full Windows 10 for free. You don't even have to pay anything.
It's an attractive tablet. I don't know. I think so. I think we're kind of getting to the point where it's starting to feel like the way smartphones have felt to me for years now, where it's like you have brand loyalty. Or maybe you don't, but a lot of people do, right? If for some reason a Samsung product is more attractive to you than, let's say, a Surface tablet that's more or less the same price and has a lot of the same bells and whistles, then you're going to like this. Otherwise, it's not compelling enough to me for that very reason. But I think for a lot of folks who like their Samsung products, this is just another pretty solid one.
I bet if they had 8 gigs of RAM and 256 gigabytes of storage, I'd actually be tempted. I think that's the only thing holding me back. I'll be honest. I'm a little tempted as it is just because it's all in one package for $1,000.
Yeah. Just because it's all like price wise, it all fits. Mm-hmm. The spec to price ratio is something that makes you salivate a little. Not a lot. No. Just a little.
I don't need to. Anything I can say is just going to sound wrong. So, hey, let's talk about a fake moon. That's no moon. That's a satellite from Chengdu. The Telegraph reports that officials from the Chinese city of Chengdu announced plans to orbit a satellite by 2020 that will be capable of reflecting sunlight onto the city's streets at night, replacing streetlights. A reflective coating would direct the light over a 50 square mile area. This is not the first time it's been attempted. Russia had the Znamya project, which explored a similar idea with two satellites that went into orbit between 1992 and 1999. Neither of them stayed in orbit. They were experimental. And in the case of Znamya 2, it got caught up on on the rocket's antenna and had to be deorbited. But this would be permanent. Officials told CIF News that testing showed the satellite could produce 8 times as much light as the moon.
It's awesome and it's also extremely weird, especially because this kind of technology, let's say you're talking about, a city that's very far north, right? Where it's like in the summer, maybe the sun doesn't go down very much, but in the winter, the sun doesn't come up very much. You could sort of control the light that people are getting, but that throws off an entire ecosystem potentially. I know this is about streetlights, but a 50 square mile area is quite large.
Yeah,
to be controlling light that doesn't actually exist otherwise.
The officials equivocate. The officials were not equivocating. They were they said the light would be equivalent to a dusk light. Just put that in your head.
So this is,
even so though.
Eight times what the moon is. So you are still at a point where there is visibility issues. It still seems dark, but it is certainly something that is, I guess we would think, to be unnaturally lit. Get ready. The cheaper we can get into space, and it has gotten exponentially cheaper over the last 5 years. It's going to get further cheaper over the next 5. We are going to see more things like this. This is the new frontier for business, and it's going to be clients that are a lot more raggedy than a city. A city has a budget. We will find a lot of reasons to have a lot of satellites up there. It's just going to be cheap enough.
Yeah. Chengdu, not a small town either. I mean, this is a town of 14.43 million or so as of 2014. So they've got an aerospace budget in this town.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. I would like to call on the only one of us on this show that lives in Alaska and thus deals with lights showing up in the middle of the night, although these are natural. What do you make of this idea, Amos?
Honestly, my first thought was this, just like the light up here in the wintertime when it kind of comes and goes so quickly, this is going to drive a lot of photographers absolutely crazy. and as far as like animals, that's got to be a concern. Just the human nature of things, it's awkward up here in the wintertime. We've only got a couple hours of sunlight, and you have basically two dawns each day. And it's getting to that point now. The sun didn't come up today until about 8:30. So this excites me on one front, but it does make me a little wary that we're going to create artificial light, just too much of it. I already can't see the aurora borealis half the time anyway. So.
Well, that's a question. Would you want to counteract the dark winters with something like this or not?
Well, if this helps the body produce vitamin D the way the sun does, and that's kind of one of the reasons for a seasonal mm-hmm. affective disorder, that might actually be really helpful. But if it doesn't, or if it's just a little bit off, if the spectrum doesn't transfer right, there's just too many questions about the light itself.
It's just reflected sunlight, so theoretically it would. But like you say, you need to actually do it to find out.
I think this is more just trying to help with night driving than it is necessarily ravaging ecosystems. But of course, that's what the idiot says before the scientist warns.
Well, and it's like... this particular city is trying to replace streetlights that are already illuminating the streets, right? So it's like aren't completely dark anyway. Mm. This is just an attempt to do it in a different way. But it's sort of like, well, if you light a candle or you have the overhead light, it's a different kind of light. It's not going to be exactly the same. So many questions remain.
It is crazy about the price to get into space that now we're like, you want to know what the cheaper option is over a long enough timeline? A satellite that reflects the sun instead of just running streetlights.
Yeah. What a waste of money running streetlights. Who are we? My God. What is this, the 20th century?
Get streetlights out of here. We need more.
Money. Everyone's asleep. Turn them off. Essential Products, the startup founded by Android creator Andy Rubin, cut 30% of its 120 employee roster in hardware, marketing, and sales division, sources tell Bloomberg. The cuts come several months after the company canceled plans for a second version of its Essential smartphone and paused development of a home smart device. Essential is reportedly working on a new phone with a small screen that will try and automatically respond to messages on a user's behalf. I personally kind of think that Andy Rubin is somebody that should get should be recognized, and I don't know if he is, as kind of like in the pantheon next to Steve Jobs as one of the most influential smartphone designers ever.
Having helped create, kind of run with the ball with Android, like he.
No, I would say the sidekick. To me, the sidekick was the first.
The sidekick, yeah.
Yeah, that a radically redesigned phone really caught my eye, that made me think like, okay, these could be something more.
The Essential phone, modular component, not that compelling. The phone itself, once they dropped the price to $400, became the best phone you could buy at that price, in my opinion. However, at that point, it had already become a byword. It had become a joke. And it's hard to tell if this is Essential circling the drain, which it might be. It might be just reducing because it can't compete, and this is the slow decline of it. That happens to the best. That happens to the Steve Jobs of the world, not just the Andy Rubins of the world. So there would be no harm if in Andy Rubin's esteem that Justin was just talking about, technologically speaking, if that were the case. Or is it a smart retrenchment? Now, we did have that, as you mentioned, that idea that they're working on a small phone with a small screen. That seems to be a burgeoning trend. So the pieces are in place. If that trend ends up being a very big trend, maybe Essential catches that wave and comes back. Or maybe they come up with some other thing that we don't know about that vaults them in. But right now, they are playing from behind. They have to play catch up.
Well, and I wonder how much Essential might have grabbed what is a share of a very crowded market, if that price would have been a lot more attractive from the beginning. Because as you mentioned, Tom, you know, a lot of people are like, what? No, why would I want that? Way too much. But if it was
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit Anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
$100 off the bat, would we be in the same place? Because cutting 30% of a 120 employee team is, that's, I mean, you didn't cut half of them, but you're getting there. I mean,
that's a chunk. Yeah.
You are drastically reducing your workforce.
But I don't think that was their business model. Their business model was making top of the line phones and not good punching above its weight budget phones.
Yep.
Well, if you are a paying subscriber of Spotify, you have a better app. Spotify has reduced buttons from 5 to 3 and is giving genres more focus in its new app redesign. The company's radio service got a redesign as well, including new artist radio playlists. Also, a new search page lets you find artists and albums and podcasts more easily. Also, more personalized, showing your own top genres under the search bar. So R&B, rock, hip hop, kids and family, and the like. Spotify's premium subscribers grew to 83 million in the second quarter of this year. It has 180 million monthly actives overall. That includes free customers. Spotify Premium is rolling out to all premium subscribers on iOS and Android globally starting today. Tom, you're a Spotify user.
I am not.
I thought you were.
No, Eileen is.
Oh.
I'm a Google Play Music.
Sometimes I fuse the two of you together as one being.
Trust me. I understand.
Yeah, this is something that I use Apple Music, not Spotify, and I'm not going to subscribe to both. So I'd love to know from somebody who pays for Spotify how they like the app redesign. But it sounds like it's echoing a lot of the features that I like most about Apple Music, particularly genre stuff that I find has become more and more intelligent, really. A lot of the stuff that I'm getting from my streaming music subscription is exactly what I want to listen to without me having to really tell it much.
And based on
previous listening history, obviously.
You know, a lot of folks are speculating this is Spotify attempting to fend off a resurgent Pandora, which not only got into the streaming music game beyond just the radio stuff, but also is being bought by SiriusXM. And if that closes, we'll get a nice big infusion of promotional power behind it. SiriusXM also striking a deal to show up on the Amazon Echo so that you can, like Spotify and Pandora, tell your Echo to play your SiriusXM stations. And of course, once they combine with Pandora, that becomes even more powerful. So coming up with a smarter way to let you easily hear music you want is essentially what this redesign is about. Instead of having a radio tab that you select and then look for things, it's just going to pop up during search and say, hey, we see that you're looking for Quavo. Would you like to listen to a radio station based on Quavo that is not just a Quavo station, but is personalized to your taste that we know about?
So, yeah. So Tom, other artists that would pop up on the Quavo station...
Well, just any of the Migos, honestly, would probably pop up. And if it were me, I might add Logic in there. I don't know. Might throw that in as well. So back in June, Mary Meeker of Kleiner Perkins Caulfield Byers indicated a slowdown of global internet access in her internet report for 2018. That didn't mean slow access. That meant a slowdown in the adoption of the internet. Generally, the UN counts internet access as someone who has gone online once in the past 3 months or more. Now, The Guardian reports an unpublished UN report from the Web Foundation shows the rate at which the world is getting online has slowed all the way back to 2015, and maybe even a little slower than Meeker reported, especially among women and the rural poor. The data shows that growth in global internet access dropped from a growth rate of 19% in 2007 to less than 6% last year. Meeker had reported a growth rate of 7% in 2017. So it's still growing. We're not seeing a decline in internet usage. Let's be clear. Sometimes these things can get confusing. But the growth rate is slowing, and we are at 50% or not quite or just a little above 50%, depending on you how you cut it. But the point being, there are a lot of people left that don't access the internet. So it's not like we've hit saturation where like, oh, well, there's always going to be the slower to get those last 10%. So there's a real concern that this could create a divide where the people who can't access it for social, cultural, or economic reasons. And those reasons will get harder to bridge because they can't access the internet.
Well, I mean, these are the questions that we've wrestled with since the birth of the internet, right? In trying to make these things and tools available, and yet running into the real world outroll problems of, you know, a lot of times the hardest people to get to are in hard to reach areas, and sometimes it is not exactly cost effective to run access to them. But in a lot of these cases, you're right, Tom. This is culture. We might not be reaching saturation, but we might be reaching close to saturation on easy cultural ways of going about it. And life has found a way, specifically with mobile and stuff like that, up till this point. But it from here on, I think that it is just going to be harder. It's going to be difficult, and the hope is that the internet remains robust enough that even if there is a divide, once somebody has it, they can make up for it fairly quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the growth rate too, and I'm looking at Meeker's report, so we're working from a few different numbers, but it did drop down in 2012, not quite below 10%, but around 10%, and then was a little bit flat and even dipping until 2016 when it bumped back up and then went down. There are cycles to this. So this decline could be explained by a lot of different things, one of which could be that, you know, we had dial-up, right? That brought us to a certain rate. And then we needed broadband to really get us to a new rate. Then we needed mobile. And mobile has made it possible for people to access the internet in places that it is not feasible to spend the money to roll out wired internet. And so maybe we're just waiting on that next wave. The next wave being Project Loon or Facebook's Project Wing is not Facebook making the equipment anymore, but it's still underway, or any of these other projects like SpaceX has going to provide rural internet from the air.
Well, and I think that this slowdown speaks to exactly what you're talking about, Tom, is that there is a new wave of, okay, well, there are certain rural areas that still are not, you know, we're not laying fiber underground. We've gotten to the point where we're running out of places where you can actually do that. There are new options, but those options are going to take a couple years, a couple cycles, in order to get folks online. There's also, I don't know, it's a much bigger sociological conversation as to, you know, whether people need to be on the internet in order to have a better life. In many ways you do in order to be part of sort of the global world that we all live in now. But I think
having access to the internet is fast becoming a necessity to maintain economic and
financial
I think the question is more the right to have the internet.
Yes. Like access, not you
get it. Not, I think, here in, we are a very privileged class of folks here in America, where we can now take the second level decision of, well, okay, have I overindulged in this water of life, or would I be better if I disconnected a little bit? Where I think we've long passed the idea, although many people in America haven't, the idea of like, hey, I desperately would, it would make my life a million times easier if I could access this. But hardware, government, culture,
cost
has gotten in the way.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, you know.
Sorry, that was me. If you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to DailyTechHeadlines.com.
You know who doesn't miss a beat? The people in our subreddit. I'll tell you what. Submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Also on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
Hey, what's in the mailbag, Sarah?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Tom. Ox Gradius actually wrote on Twitter, we thought we'd take it to the tweets today. This is in response to our show with Scott Johnson yesterday. Ox says, y'all were talking about streaming tech and terminals yesterday, the same day that I got my Pixelbook. I'm a security engineer, and we're evaluating how moving to Pixelbooks might work for everyone, including those who write code and admin systems. I've got to admit, I really love the form factor of the Pixelbook over my gigantic workstation replacement laptop. With Linux containers coming to Chrome OS, it's becoming more possible for me to work either locally or via cloud systems like AWS. Just my two cents.
Hey, thank you for that. I love the kind of feet on the ground. I'm actually using it. Here's what I think. In fact, we got another one of those from Paul, who shares some of his expertise on progressive web apps. Thank you, Paul. Paul says, progressive web apps is a label given to a collection of technologies that can be used to progressively enhance a web page, hence the name. You can use those features without being a full app. We talked a lot about the full app experience, but Paul's like, hey, for example, you can access the hardware from a PWA without the app being quote unquote installed, as long as a web page uses HTTPS and gets permission. Hardware APIs like Bluetooth and location can be accessed by any site. Also, the install or add to home screen is really just superficial. As soon as you visit a site using a service worker, that site can start downloading its files for offline functionality. When the user installs or adds to home screen, it's really just making a link to the site in various locations. Functionally, the site is already installed, so when Google talks about supporting PWAs on Windows, they're talking about the linking part, the making it obvious that it's their part. PWAs have worked offline in Windows for a while. They just haven't been on your desktop or in your app drawer, so it was a little bit harder for people to get used to them. Check out the URL Chrome Service Worker-Internals on Chrome, and you'll be surprised how many websites are already downloaded offline on your system. Lastly, in addition to Windows and Chrome OS, PWAs do work fully on Android and iOS 11.3 and later. Two PWAs I love on mobile are the Starbucks and Twitter PWAs. You get 95% of native capability without having to install a battery-sucking native app. And I think I mentioned the Financial Times PWA. That's another one that's really done well. Thanks for the great work. Just sent in my yearly pledge, Paul, the software entomologist, somewhere lost in Texas. Thank you, Paul. That was great.
Paul, gentleman and a scholar. Also, thanks to Justin Robert Young. Man, you have been on the road. It must be good to be home.
Ah, yes. Only so I can leave tomorrow to Los Angeles. I'll be at Politicon this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Not doing any kind of talk, but I am going to be selling my card game, The Contender. So come on into the dealer's room and pick one up if you get a chance. Otherwise, you can, of course, sign up for my free political newsletter at freepoliticalnewsletter.com. 5 stories, 5 days a week, mostly gifts, sometimes hot takes.
Daily Tech News Show has a new spinoff. If you're into games, but not so into games that you get kind of put off by some of the shows out there that go real hardcore, nothing wrong with that, just not your thing, then you need to check out dailytechnewsshow.com/MVGB. Monthly video games briefing with Patrick Beja and Scott Johnson. You like those guys on DTNS, you're going to love them once a month talking about video games in a way everybody can understand. So go sign up right now, dailytechnewsshow.com/MVGB.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We love your feedback. Keep it coming, everybody. We're also live Monday through Friday. Join us if you can, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC, and find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Chris Ashley as our guest, and of course, Lynn Peralta will be here too. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.